I wanted to conclude something on physical evidence for people, because there has been, you know, there's controversy about photos, there's controversy about metal, and there's some things that most people don't know, and basically we've kind of not spoken much about it, because when the skeptics attack certain things, like the metal samples, and they go nuts about that, it perpetuates the interest, and, you know, we feign indignation a little. What, in case you're not fully up on this part, meaning you, the listeners, or anybody here, Meyer was given, he claims, metal samples by these alleged ETs. They were turned over to the investigative team, and they were examined by several scientists. People think only Marcel Vogel. But Marcel Vogel was the main scientist who actually did an electron scanning microscopic examination of them, and he videotaped that, too.
All right.
Now, is that a click that you're hearing on my line?
That is on your end.
Hold on. Let me see if I can straighten that out real quickly. Right. I hope that's better.
All right.
Now, when Marcel Vogel did the analysis on the metals, up until this time, most of the, let's say, intelligence agencies around the world were seeing, okay, pretty interesting photos, but photos can be faked, big deal. But we want to look at this and just keep our eyes on it. Okay, so Vogel made an analysis that I'm just about to describe, but the first thing I'll tell you is that it had become a point of contention with some skeptics. They were saying Marcel Vogel wasn't a patent-holding scientist. He was just, you know, he was a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that we let that go on for a while. People like Mr. Biedny and others were literally pounding their fists on desks about Marcel Vogel, you know, being just a lackey. So then we posted online on my website, where people can find it, records of at least some, if not most, of the 30-odd patents he either held or co-held. And he was no slacker. By the time he was about 10 years of age, he had succeeded in synthesizing the chemicals that produce bioluminescence in fireflies.
At 10 years old?
Yes. He was a genius, and he was given the metal samples because he was also an expert in energy conversion within crystals and things like that. When he examined these samples, he found that they were not only metallic, there was crystalline structures inside, the laser, the machining exceeded anything that he could have imagined was done. But here is where it got very interesting. Virtually every element in the periodic table that we know about was present, and the rare earth element tellurium. Now, tellurium is very, very rare. It's probably just about the most rare and expensive of the earth elements, and I'm not a physicist, metallurgist, or anything like that. I've read up a little bit on this, and there are other people that can tell you more about it. It's used in certain radioactive processes. It's a soft metal. Well, when this was publicized, suddenly the investigators in the case had tails on them, and Meyer became quite the target of intelligence surveillance, which continues to this day, by the way.
Because of the tellurium?
Yes, because it was recognized that this is more expensive than platinum. It's not even available in Switzerland.
So they're trying to say, how did he get this?
How did he get this? And because of the unique nature of the metal of which the tellurium was, you know, a component, the applications for weaponry and perhaps flight equipment was very, very interesting. Now, the metal samples allegedly disappeared, which, of course, irritates the skeptics, too. When I spoke recently with Lee Elders, who was, you know, one of the main investigators just days ago, he said, by the way, we don't think they simply disappeared. We think they were absorbed into IBM because about a year after they had it, IBM was releasing some interesting metals that they were demonstrating some very unique properties with and that they hadn't had in development before. But he also told me that he and the other two lead investigators had attracted tails that they recognized as people from Eastern Bloc as well as Western Bloc. And when he got a briefing, because Lee Elders had told me, he said, I decided to play ball with the CIA. We were briefed in and out of Switzerland, meaning every time we went through London on our way to Zurich, we were picked up, even if we didn't have, and we didn't, he said, reservations on planes and no way of knowing. He said they always knew where we were. And we got used to being picked up and taken to one of the two places, kind of questioned lightly. The photos would be taken into another room and ostensibly copied, then returned to us. And he said, I decided to play ball with them. If they left me alone, basically, and didn't hassle me, I'd cooperate, but I would never. And he said, we knew our phones were bugged, and I would never get involved in anything that, you know, was going to create a problem too much for me. I mean, he was very honest about it. So the nature of these metals is what really got the surveillance going, and the CIA was based in a military facility. It's literally just up the hill from Myers Place, still there. The CIA is no longer in there. And when I asked Billy about it, he says, no, they're farther away now. You see, their equipment's very good. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be so close.
Now, do they have the samples? Who's got the samples now?
Well, the guess that Lee had is that IBM somehow had them. And, or, you know, if they hadn't been, quote-unquote, taken back by the Pleiaren, they either were utilized by IBM directly, or they got enough information from the analysis by Vogel. Again, this part's speculative. It's true that Vogel did analyze it, and we'll release those videos or DVDs in a certain time showing the analysis and all that stuff. But this is documented. It's well in the case, and again, Vogel wasn't the only guy that looked at the metal. Now, the last thing here is this wedding cake ship. Just a little more information on that.
Okay, then I want to get into these predictions.
We will do
right?
it, well, right. I promise you. But this is because so many people say, oh, it's a simple model, and Mr. Ritzman had claimed he slapped a couple of pie pans together and called it a day, couldn't do it. Well, here's the thing. Lee and Britt and Wendell went to a metallurgist. This is probably circa 1980. And they showed him photographs of this object, and they said, can you make this? The guy said, yeah, I think I can do that. And he says, what do you want? He said, well, we want this to be, very true to what you see. He said, well, how big do you want? He said, well, we need about 3 meters. And the guy said, well, okay, or 2 meters, 2 or 3 meters, something like that, 7 to 9 feet. And he said, what's it made out of? He said, and the metallurgist was saying, these globes around it could be silver, and this is a softer metal, blah, blah, blah. And he says, okay, can you make one very true to this? Whereas he says, I can probably do a pretty good job. He said, you want it about 2 to 3 meters? He says, yeah. He says, what will it cost? And he said, well, I can do it for about $25,000.
Whoa.
And so, apart from the fact that it's also got these 100 little, like, ruby-like gems set around the rim of it and all the rest of it, they knew that Meyer was on a pension. He was renovating this old farmhouse. He had no money, no skill, and no metallurgist has ever come forward to say, hey, I knocked that puppy out and got it in my backyard.
And we know he didn't do it.
And he didn't do it. Now, here's the last one on the wedding cake ship, and this is very interesting. And people can find this for free on my site, I think, in the photo or sound analysis document. When the sounds were recorded, there were several situations when Meyer and his wife and other witnesses, up to 15 other people, were around when a ship would hover, and he took these 3 or 4 cassette machines and recorded the sounds. They recorded the sound of this wedding cake ship, and it exhibited a lot of interesting properties. The cycle range was close to the Schumann residence, and the patterns were very interesting and discreet. So one of the things they did was they brought the sounds without the photographs to a guy named Robin Shellman, who was an undersea sound expert. And he's actually filmed in a film that we will re-release with from Lee and Britt on the case called Contact. He's in there, and they say to him, what about these sounds? And he starts to describe the sounds. And of course, all the sound engineers had said, listen, we cannot even duplicate this with synthesizers. These things shift too fast. He said, I'll tell you about these sounds. You would need an array of circular objects. And he virtually draws the top of the wedding cake ship from the top down, and the investigators almost drop their jaws. Based on the sounds, he was able to illustrate the source, and it looks like the wedding cake ships.